Welcome to Planting Pinellas, the podcast that digs deep into the heart of gardening in Pinellas County, presented by Master Gardener volunteers of the University of Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences. I'm Charlotte Vaughn.
I'm Alan Shapiro. Whether you're a local looking to connect with your community or a visitor curious about your area's culture, conservation, and all things green, this is the place for you.
Join us as we explore the people, places, projects, and of course, plants that make Pinellas a thriving hub of sustainability, innovation, and natural beauty. From gardening tips to environmental initiatives, we've got the roots of Pinellas covered. So grab your gardening gloves and let's get started.
Hi, welcome back to the Planting Pinellas podcast. I'm Alan Shapiro.
I'm Charlotte Vaughn.
And one of the things we are going to be doing is a series of episodes on the 9 Florida-friendly landscaping principles. And it's really important that these principles are, I don't want to say you don't have to follow them religiously if you're going to be doing some landscaping, but living in Florida and especially in Pinellas County, where we have very warm climate and it's wonderful year-round, a lot of plants and animals, but plants specifically that maybe shouldn't be here, end up here. And that presents another problem. And so if you follow the 9 Florida-friendly landscaping principles in your landscaping, you're going to have a much better experience in terms of fertilizing, in terms of irrigation, in terms of a lot of things. And so each of these episodes is going to focus on one of the principles and how it impacts you as a landscaper, as a gardener. And I think it'll be really helpful, especially when you hear some of our stories as master gardeners.
Right. And the principles are really about sustainability and how the more that you do, the more that you have to do is a phrase that I've heard, you know, kind of in connection with this, where if you are planning your landscape in a way that you're following these principles that we'll get into in just a minute, that it gives you a better long-term sustainable management of this because you're not fighting against the conditions and the characteristics of the plants that you have, that you're choosing things that work well in our area and you're choosing the places for them to be that work well for the needs that they have. So I want to just read through what these principles are just briefly. And the one that we're going to talk about today is the right plant in the right place. And this is a very foundational. It's number one for a reason. And we'll come back to that. Number two is watering efficiently. Number three is fertilizing appropriately. Number four is mulch, mulch, mulch. That's a very important one. It has so many benefits. So attracting wildlife, managing yard pests, those two kind of go hand in hand. And, you know, attracting the things that you want, avoiding the things you don't. Recycling, which you think about recycling in terms of like metal and plastic, but there's recycling that can happen in landscaping as well. Not just the bag that you bring home something, but the material, the trimmings of your produce or anything like that, the trimmings from your grass, whatever you happen to have, managing or reducing stormwater runoff. And that again ties in with protecting the waterfront, which is principle number 9. So all of these things, and for us in particular, protecting the waterfront is so significant. Yes. Because basically the whole county is in a watershed. And whether you're in the McKay Creek watershed or the Tampa Bay watershed or whatever it is, everything that comes off of your yard flows into a body of water. If you're in Pinellas County, there's very few exceptions to that. So we are all responsible for managing the waterfront and protecting it based on what we do in our own yard.
And again, we're going to concentrate on the right plant, right place for this episode. But I think what's important to understand is that if you follow all of these, it reduces the amount of energy and work you really have to do in your yard. So if you have these principles and do this research and think about these things up front, it's going to save you a lot of time and energy. And it's also going to help the environment, especially our environment in our coastal community.
And they're all interconnected. Like every one of these things that we do has an impact that it kind of builds on the rest. And it's not something that you really are picking and choosing that I want to fertilize appropriately, but I don't want to attract wildlife, or I want to water efficiently, but I don't want to recycle. It's really kind of a package deal that if you want to have a Florida-friendly landscape, that you're likely to need elements of all of these. And the more that you incorporate each one, I think the better your result is going to be in the long run. So talking about the right plant in the right place, I'm going to read what the Florida Friendly Landscaping resource defines. It says, achieving a natural, healthy balance in your landscape starts with putting the right plant in the right place. This encompasses far more than simply putting sun-loving plants in your yard's sunny spots. You also need to consider things like maintenance and water needs. Matching plants to the conditions in your landscape can help them thrive once established with little or no irrigation and few or no fertilizers or pesticides. The secret to successful landscape design is thorough planning. So how do you plan for your landscape? There's so many things that you can get into with that. I want to kind of share a story of a plant that I had given to me. It was actually two plants that another garden friend gave me, an aglaonema and an oxalis, the false shamrock and the Chinese evergreen.
Okay.
And they looked beautiful together. So I thought, I'm just going to stick them in this nice little container. And the aglaonema was doing great. And the oxalis basically died off. I thought, oh, well, I guess the plant just didn't last. Well, I had to move that pot outside. And suddenly the aglaonema started browning and the oxalis appeared out of nowhere. And I discovered and I realized that they don't get along. They don't like the same things. So I separated them and I put the oxalis outside and the aglaonema in a pot inside. And now they're both doing great.
They're thriving.
Yeah. So I realized even in that little microscope that there was a difference, that these were not well suited to the same conditions. And on paper, it looked like they should be, but in practicality, the oxalis needed more bright indirect sunlight and right. The aglaonema actually can thrive in almost really dark, like understory kind of conditions.
So I'll ask you if you did a little bit of research.
No.
But if you would have, keep in mind that these stories, I'm going to get into a story too, yeah. But you know, we were not master gardeners. We were dabbling.
Sure.
But I think the whole point is, right, if you do a little research,
yeah,
not a lot, you don't have to do a lot, you might have discovered that in the beginning and maybe
saved some trouble.
Yeah. And my story is the walking yellow iris. So beautiful, beautiful plant. I put it out in an area that got a lot of full sun. It wasn't doing that well. And again, didn't think about this in research. And I will give my wife a lot of credit for this. Because she said, you please plant this and put this in a different place. And she wanted it near our lanai that gets a lot of partial sun. So it gets some morning sun. You know, once it gets above our privet, it gets about, I'd say, maybe a couple hours.
Filtered light.
And then the rest of the day, the sun is really not on it. It's shaded. And I didn't think anything of it. You know, and this was last year that we put it in there. And it was, you know, I got it established and actually have two of them. And this year they are thriving beyond anything else. And this was after the hurricanes too, because we had some other plants growing in that area that after the hurricanes, they were gone. They survived. And are doing excessively well. So once again, once I started seeing this, I went, oh, let me go see where I can go get some information. Sure enough, the walking iris, which is a Florida friendly plant,
right?
I discovered needs partial shade and filtered light. And it's just thriving. I mean, this morning, I can't even count how many flowers are growing and blooming. So again, I think the big point, and I think you feel the same way, is that it's okay to make mistakes. Right. So while this principle is really important, and it is the right plant, right place, and you know, if you do a little bit of research up front, it can save you some time and energy. But even with that, because one of the other things I discovered with the walking iris is that it requires a more acidic soil.
Now, that's an interesting point.
Right. And I didn't get our soil tested, but I have to believe that the soil must be a little more acidic because it's thriving. That's my guess.
Okay. And I looked up, because we are trying to be really specific to Pinellas County, that in general, Florida's soil, the median pH for Florida soil is 6.1, which is considered slightly acidic. But Pinellas County in particular leans more acidic based on the coastal soil that the pH tends to be above 7 or a little more alkaline. And that could be because of limestone or seashells, other factors. So it really draws back to the importance of testing, because there can be a diversity even within our county.
And the testing can be done. I mean, you can bring a soil sample, the extension desk. Now, they don't do the soil testing anymore there, but
they have a kit.
There's a kit. There's a form that you can fill out. And you can get your soil tested. You can get it tested for just pH, or you can go even further for a lot of the micronutrients that are in the soil too, if you wanted to.
Right. And the fee is different depending on how many things you want tested. And that's available online as well. You don't even have to come to the extension desk, although
Correct.
We'd love to see you. We'll put the website in the show notes.
Yeah, we will.
You can send that directly to UF in Gainesville. There's a testing center, but that's really a great first step in figuring out how your plants are going to thrive. And, you know, deciding what plants you want is going to be based on what your pH is and what your nutrient levels are. And if it's too high or too low, you can either mitigate that. You can modify it with amendments to the soil, or you can just pick plants that are going to be happy, because the more you do, the more you have to do. If you start out by amending your soil, then you're probably going to have to keep amending your soil to keep that happy. Right. And I know we both had an example of blueberries, that blueberries prefer a different pH.
Blueberries require around 4 to 5.5, very acidic soil.
Yeah, and that's not what we have natively in our area. No. So you can grow blueberries here and they can do great, but you're going to have to modify that somehow. And having these basic principles, and I don't want to get too far into this, but just as an example of how what you select either needs to suit your conditions, or if there's something that you just really want, like a blueberry, that you can baby it to the level that, you know, put it in a container.
Container gardening is a great thing, because you can really control so much more of the pH, of any of the nutrients, and that can really, it can still look beautiful.
And they have the ones that are self-watering, or you can hook it up to a micro-irrigation system. And I actually have my self-watering planters hooked to a micro-irrigation system that refills the reservoir. So it's great that you can do all of these things, but knowing what you need.
So let's talk about that. How do I know the right plant in the right place?
You definitely want to figure out your location. How much sun do you have? How much elevation change do you have? Because Florida, our county is mostly flat, but there's going to be low spots in your yard, or you might want to create a low spot or create a raised spot, maybe for water runoff issues,
right,
that you can make a rain garden or something. We'll get into those things later.
You know, that's the interesting thing, is we talk about the right plant, the right place, as we, you know, we are talking about other principles, as you talked about, you know, watering and fertilizing, and those are other principles, but it's all important, because if you don't think about that up front before you start your landscape, you may be spending more money because the plants may die.
And the difference between a novice gardener and an experienced gardener is that the experienced gardener has killed more plants and lived to tell the story. But you don't want to be wasteful in your resources, because
right,
we do have limited resources at some point. That, you know, financially for yourself, you don't want to have to keep buying this expensive plant over and over.
Exactly.
Or just wasting your time on it.
Yeah.
But how do you make the right decisions up front? And there is an amazing tool that the University of Florida has available for free. You can use it online, or you can download an app, and it is called the FFL Plant Guide. And that is, of course, Florida Friendly Landscaping.
And I love this guide.
I love it.
I love this guide.
I had somebody yesterday that we were just chit-chatting, and she's seen my personal garden. She's like, I should ask you a question. And so we started talking about a particular site that she wanted to plant something. I was like, let me show you this tool. And 5 minutes later, she had downloaded it.
When I was at the help desk last week, and somebody came in and they were interested. This was after the hurricanes. They live near the water. They live near the intercoastal. They lost everything. And they were like, I'm done with this. I want to plant something that's going to be salt tolerant and can be here. And I brought up the plant guide, and she was like, oh my gosh. And I'm saying, yes, because you can see right here what you can do. So again, I love this guide.
It's not foolproof. We were earlier.
No, that's true.
About, you know, some of the coastal communities, they just had so much inundation from the saltwater that, You know, one community I noticed in particular had a huge hedgerow of podocarpus, and they were ripping it out and replacing it with more podocarpus. And I'm thinking, well, that doesn't make sense. But I looked it up, and that really is a great plant for that place. But the particular storms we had in 2024 were off the charts. You know, whereas it probably had been there for years and years before, that one was just too much.
So it could handle some salt spray, you know, probably.
We can't control nature. There's going to be exceptions.
There's going to be exceptions, but it could handle a high tide and that would go away and it wouldn't kill it. But
right.
Last year were horrendous. So this app, what I love about it is first it'll say there's 427 plants in this app. So the next thing you then do is you go to the settings on it and you say only show plants in my recommended zip code. So this is what I think is so, so cool about this app, because it's going to filter automatically very quickly just for everything in our zip code.
So most of our county is going to be in zone 10, either zone 10A in kind of the far north and more inland section of the county, or along the coastline and the south part of the county in particular, that we've got more of a 10B. But in general, we're 10 as a group, whether it splits to A or B, that most of the county is going to be zone 10.
And as we talked about this in the last episode, which I think is really important, again, how unique we are, that botanically, we are zone 10. We are really South Florida.
Right.
You know, but geographically we're central. So a lot of times when information comes out from the Extension Service, from UF, and it'll say, you know, North, Central, and South Florida, a lot of times we have to think about in Pinellas County, South Florida, and getting back to this app. So I can filter for 10, but the other beautiful thing in this app is you can say, you can look at salt tolerance. There's a lot of filtering that you can do, even on the plant type.
And that's in the custom filter, not just the standard filter.
Right.
They actually have two, which that threw me off. But they do have two filters as of right now. I think they're doing some updates.
Okay.
So that might change by the time that somebody listens to this. But if you see an option for a custom filter, then that's the one that gives you more drilling down into specifics.
And then once you do that, you know, when you do filtering, it'll show you the plants in the list there. So whatever plant you're looking for. And then what's really wonderful is you drill down into the plant. So in the plant gives you, you know, geographic considerations, yard considerations. So it'll tell you whether it needs full shade or partial shade or full sun, the soil texture. It'll tell you the acidity, the pH. And then it also gives you the salt tolerance. So the beautiful thing of having this app, especially on your phone, is you're at the nursery and you look at something and go, wow, that is going to be really, really beautiful. But is it the right plant? In the right place, as long as you've done some research up front, right, in terms of your landscape and where.
And if you know what your soil type is, which is mostly going to be sand or some range of sand and loam, and you know what your nutrient contents are, or you're willing to amend it with something like a compost or, you know, whatever kind of fertilizer that you're comfortable using, especially for a planting bed, that you can do a little bit more control if you've got a raised bed or, you know, just a little flower patch. By making sure, first of all, because there are plants that can be sold that are not good for our area. They're not Florida friendly, or they might even be harmful. And so there are invasive plants that some of them are on like a high alert list where they can't sell them in the state. But there's others where IFAS would not recommend them, but they're not banned from Florida. So understanding that, because some things get upgraded or downgraded, those evaluations are usually revisited every 5 or 10 years. And so something that maybe they were concerned it could be invasive or in similar conditions in other locations, it might have shown tendencies to be invasive, but that hasn't happened here, then okay, that might get downgraded to where now we would recommend it. But otherwise, there could be enough concern that we shouldn't be recommending it. Or if you find something in your landscape, is one of the first steps if you're planning to maybe make your yard more Florida friendly, is figuring out what you already have. Because you don't want to go out and buy something and then come home and realize, oh, I've got five of those. And they spread and reseed easily. So I just spent money on something that I could have had for free. But you also want to look and see, what do I have that needs to go? And if you have an invasive, we have kind of some watch list plants, Kogan grass and skunk vine, air potato, Melaleuca is a very harmful one. They actually call it punk tree. I love that name. It's
one that it's I hate jerk. The most, Brazilian pepper.
Right. And I hate the camphor tree. It's, all these plants that they're harmful.
And UF, and again, IFAS there's a site that we'll put into the show notes where you can actually look up invasive species.
Yeah, because that's by no means an exhaustive list.
And that's where they have the listing in terms of whether it's really banned and what level of invasiveness it is.
But the good thing about the Florida Friendly app is those plants aren't even going to show up.
Correct.
So if you're at the nursery and you're looking at something and it doesn't even show up in the app, it might not be the right plant for your place.
The other thing I think that's really important when it comes to the right plant, right place and Florida Friendly principles is that these plants aren't all native,
right,
or considered native. Again, there's a whole controversy on terms of what is considered native and not native. But the point being,
in general, the definition of that would be presumed to be here, or that there's evidence that it was here before there was major human interaction from Western civilization, at least. Or I think that falls somewhere around the 1500s, but I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, I think that was about when I remember from the class. That was about where it was. But I think that's important for everybody to understand that the plant doesn't necessarily have to be all Florida native. Because I think some people in their mind, when you say Florida friendly landscape, they think, okay, I have to get rid of all of my grass. I have to get rid of all of everything that I ever really liked and wanted.
I think it's going to be ugly.
And I think it's going to be ugly, and it's going to be overgrown, and it's going to be terrible. And that's not the case.
No.
If you plant the right plant in the right place, and it's a Florida friendly plant, again, native is good.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be. Some of these Florida-friendly plants aren't native necessarily.
Native plants are going to require less intervention in general. They're going to require less support that you have to supplement them. But that doesn't mean that if you want turf grass and you're willing to put in the work that it takes to maintain it, then that's fine. But if you maybe step back and say, is there a reason? What benefit does it serve to me? If you've got a high traffic area, then it might be the right plant for you in that place. But if it's just for show and you're not doing anything with it, then maybe a ground cover or expanding your planting beds. And it doesn't have to be all or nothing. You could literally expand 1 foot of your planting beds and just reduce that much of your turf grass, and you're saving however many pounds over years of fertilizers and irrigation and all of these things. That anything that you can do, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. And we don't want you to think as a listener that this isn't achievable. This isn't something that I can do. But what can you do? And how can you make your yard more Florida friendly? And baby steps are okay, because they're still getting you in the right direction.
Exactly. And I think that's really very, very important. We're not asking anybody to be a master gardener or to be, to go get your degree in horticulture or botany. As you said, I think baby steps is what it really takes. And if you start that and you start seeing the benefits of that, not only from less work that you have to do, maybe less, pulling out the weeds.
Right.
Then I think you're going to go, oh, let me expand a little bit more next year and a little bit more.
Maybe deciding that something that people consider a weed is actually kind of pretty and serves a purpose.
That's true. I should say, weed is a judgment.
Well, and I found an Emerson quote. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that a weed is a plant whose virtues have not yet been discovered. So rewilding is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's not necessary either. So if you're in a planned community, a managed community, then you have to fit a little bit of the trend of your area. Read the room, that's fine. But the little steps that you can do to find a balance between maintaining the look and getting a more hands-off or, just a more efficient use of your land. So just to recap, the basic point that we're trying to get across is that Florida-friendly landscaping and the right plant in the right place, along with all of the other 9 principles, are just a guide to help us protect the natural resources, preserve the unique characteristics and beauty that we have here, that it saves water, it protects the environment, reduces pollution, reduces the maintenance efforts that we have to do. So specifically with that right plant in the right place, picking something that only grows to the size that you want, that you're not going to put a 7-foot shrub under a window, that you're constantly going to be fighting the nature of that plant. So you pick something that only grows 2 or 3 feet tall and putting it where it might not need irrigation once it gets established, that any plant is going to need it up front. But once it settles in, that it can just manage on its own and not have to have so much intervention from us, and choosing the right soil type, the right pH, anything that you need to add, or reducing your need to add things to it, and dealing with pest resistance and maintaining the appearance that you want, deciding what is it that you want out of your landscape and how do I create that in a way that is more efficient and more eco-friendly. And ultimately, that's going to be less work for you. And in my book, and in this heat, that is a wonderful thing. So our wrap up as we continue through this series is, we coined it as Ready, Set, Grow, talking about some of the things that we can be doing right now in our area and that they are relevant to the time when this episode is coming out. So looking at the month of April, getting ready, what do you do in your landscape? That a lot of this planning that we've talked about, this is a great time to get that plan in of what you're going to do throughout the rest of this year. And our growing season is pretty much year round, but knowing what is happier in the warm season versus the cool season that we're just coming out of, and watching for the insects that we have in the landscape. If there's things that are potentially harmful that are just starting to get onto your plants, if you can get rid of those right away, it could be something as simple as the spittle bugs. I have those on my rosemary. I'm just going out there every day and spraying them off with water. And that's a very low impact, what we would call integrated pest management, where that's not a lot of work. It's not a lot of resource, but it helps to keep them from spreading and taking over and getting your plants ready for the upcoming season. But the next thing, getting set, what to plant, what to grow, that we have a lot of plants that we can be growing in April.
This time of year, you can really liven up your plant beds by putting in some annuals or perennials or even some wildflowers, but specifically heat tolerant blooming ones like canna lilies, coleus, and portulaca. These will thrive much more in our heat and our humidity as it's going up. And it's a little, probably more drought tolerant, considering our time of the year now is going to be much less rain.
Right, because we're going into the rainy season over the summer, but the heat that comes with it, that, you know, we're beyond thinking about spring flowers at this point. It's time for summer. You know, we're already getting ready for summer because it just gets warm so early here. And herbs, you can plant things like basil and mint. You want to keep mint in a container so that it doesn't get out of control. It can take over your yard, but anything that does well in the heat, some of them need to be cooler, like cilantro. It's too late for that. But these others that do well, and then vegetables, beans, even some of the cabbages can handle the warmer weather. Some of them prefer cooler. So checking out what can still be planted at this time versus just preparing for the summer kind of crops and the more heat tolerant things, and harvesting whatever you've got. That, you know, I'm pulling carrots every day for a snack because they're developing and they're maturing.
It goes right back to the right plant, right place. And that goes with and vegetable gardening in our area.
And the right place in the season is just as important as the right place in your conditions of your yard. So we do want to mention as well that in the month of April, and specifically on the 20th and the 27th, which is a Saturday and Sunday right at the end of the month, there is the Green Thumb Festival at the Walter Fuller Park in St. Pete, and that is an annual event that the University of Florida IFAS Extension always has a setup, display, and education and children's activities and all kind of things. And Alan and I will both be there on Saturday, the 26th. So we would love to see you there.
Yes, come by
and say hello.
Say hello. And
We look forward to hearing from all of you. We've gotten some great feedback already about the March episode, and just excited to see how it's continuing to grow and get more of an audience. And so please help us out with that. Please share it with your friends in the area.
Please follow.
Yeah, subscribe or follow, depending on what platform you use. It has different names, but all these great things. And check out the show notes for the website resources there. A lot of the links I'll be repeating each month in the notes just because they're such great resources. Things like the Florida Friendly Plant app, I will have a web link. And we didn't even talk about the other apps. There's four or five different apps
yes.
that are all on that same web link. So you're going to have to go look that up for yourself. Don't take my word for it.
And we're excited to continue this series. The next episode is going to be really Principle 3.
Right.
Which is about fertilizing. And the reason we're skipping two and doing three is because
we'll come back to it.
We will come back to it, but there's a very specific reason, and that is because fertilizer after June 1st is banned
in Pinellas County.
Now, there's some caveats to that, and we will definitely drill into that. And hopefully you'll listen and hear those little caveats to you can't fertilize.
So thank you for listening. We'll get into that next month, and then we will see you next time.
Thanks for tuning into Planting Pinellas. We hope you're feeling inspired to get involved, learn more, and grow alongside this incredible community.
Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you like the show, leave us 5 stars or a review. And don't forget to share with fellow plant lovers. Until next time, keep planting, keep growing, and keep making Pinellas County a place to thrive.
This podcast is brought to you by the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences Extension in Pinellas County, Florida, an equal opportunity institution.